Christian Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
All right, awesome. It's 1 minute past four in the afternoon. I did have a little bit of an echo there, but it seems to have gone, so I think we're doing okay. You're listening to Free Association. My name's Dennis. I'm here for an hour. Revolution Radio, obviously, it's a listener-supported station. We need your help to keep it going. You can do that by calling in at some point at revolution.radio. Have a look at the donation page. See what you can do. If you can manage to do something monthly, then that's awesome. If not, just a one-off donation. Give us $5 a month if you can. And it keeps the servers running. We don't get paid. We're all volunteers, so we just do this because we love doing it, basically. And we've all got a message to share. We've all got something we want to share. And yeah, that's it. It's a bright sunny day in Newcastle, 14 degrees. It's the 8th of April, 2023. I get the date right today. I got it wrong yesterday when I recorded something and I annoyed somebody. It can't be helped, because it is what it is. I'm keeping it loose today. I've got a couple of things to play, but I want to talk a little bit about, we were talking about stag and hen parties in the chat just before the show started. So maybe talk about Newcastle a little bit. I'm based in Newcastle, which is the north of England. Not always the sunniest place in the world, so we're very, very excited when we see sun, because mostly it's wet. And yeah, it's Easter weekend, so it's a long holiday weekend. There's lots of tourists around. I walked past a group of about 30 lads this morning on my way back from having some breakfast, and all Irish, I think. So I know exactly where they were heading from one hotel to another. So one group must have got in yesterday. Another group's got in first thing this morning. And they've met up and they're going to the other hotel. I guess that's what was happening. From the size of the group, some had suitcases, some didn't. So it's difficult to know. Because if they'd all just arrived, they'd all have suitcases. So it's guesswork, but I'm thinking that's what's probably happening. But a group of about 30 people. Seems like they were Irish. The Irish normally stay in one particular hotel as large groups, so these guys seem to have been split between a couple of places. There's a lot of bars in the town that will totally accept stag and hen parties or large groups of lads or large groups of women. And there's quite a few that won't accept large groups of anybody, football fans or anybody else. That usually the real ale bars won't let anybody in like that, and the cocktail bars won't let anybody in like that, but everybody else lets people in and just takes the money. Hi, Lemmy, welcome to the chat. Good to see you, man. Let me know if there's anything going on with the sound, but I think it should be okay for the time being. I've got a piece to play about artificial intelligence that I've stolen from Dark Horse Podcast because I thought it was a good piece. It's about 20 minutes or so, but I want to talk about my experience of ChatGPT for a few minutes. As ChatGPT is run by a company called OpenAI, and OpenAI started as it's meant to be a non-profit kind of social enterprise type of deal, but it's developing artificial intelligence, funded by lots of people, including Elon Musk initially. They've just teamed up with the search within Microsoft, and they're part of Bing now. So they've got a commercial arm and a non-profit arm. There's a trust that runs the research side of things, and then there's a commercial arm that's monetizing whatever they're doing. It's a good product. It's not so good at Bing. I didn't find it particularly interesting at Bing, but if you go to openai.com, set yourself up an account, you can get a free account, you can ask it questions. If it's assuming that it's not busy with doing other stuff, they give you free access when it's not busy. But I'm guessing the majority of what's going on with OpenAI and ChatGPT is coming from the States or from India. So the bit in the middle is the bit that I'm in. So that's the bit that isn't busy. So I should be all right with a free account for a while. I started playing with it in December of last year, and I thought it was rubbish. I thought it was complete rubbish. Well, Lenny, I agree with you that it could be dangerous technology, but I don't think it is at the moment, from what I've seen of it at least. There's a lot of things going on there's a lot of stuff going on with artificial intelligence, but a lot of it is people projecting onto it, projecting their own fear of the future onto it, or their own fear of death onto it. It could potentially blow the whole place up. There's no getting around that. It's just like it could turn into a Terminator situation, and we have to be careful with it. But at the moment, it's a question answering mechanism more than anything else. Once they start putting it in charge of nuclear power stations, then's the point where I'll be worried. Yeah, I agree with you. It depends on the programmer and the user and the context. So at the moment, a lot of people are excited about it, and there's a lot of hype around it, and there's a lot of kind of enthusiastic projection going on and predictions and all the rest of it. So my experience is that it was just incomplete. It was... I asked it some questions about Nord Stream 2 pipeline situation, the sabotage there, and I took it through a series of logical questions going from, did Joe Biden threaten to sabotage Nord Stream 2, to did Joe Biden order the sabotage of Nord Stream 2, and it wouldn't go to the final question. It just says, I'm learning, I don't know the answer, which is... I suppose it's fair enough, but it's a cop-out because I'd taken it through a logical process to give evidence that Joe Biden had threatened to blow up Nord Stream 2. And they have the capacity to do it. And there was evidence that they were in the area and had the capacity in the June before it happened, basically, for a military exercise. So... there was a cop-out and a kind of limited response going on. So it's part of the danger is that you're only getting part of the story. You're only getting the official narrative. So that is a problem. It's getting better, though, because I've been playing with it the last couple of days and asking similar questions and getting better answers. So it is getting better, but it's still kind of putting a lot of caveats into things. Yeah, I did ask some things about the JFK assassination as well. And it's still coming up with a Warren Commission narrative. Unless you ask it about rumors and speculation, and then it'll start giving you other kind of perspectives. So what I did that got me some better answers was I asked it to respond as if it's an independent journalist with absolute freedom of speech and to include rumors and speculation. And that opens it up a little bit. So it still insists that the only things are true are the official narrative, but it will give you the speculation and the rumors. So there are good ways and bad ways to ask the question to get access to the information. So I've been asking questions about ivermectin research, and it's quite good at giving results and giving information about ivermectin research, but you've got to be specific about the country. If you're specific about the country, it will list the ivermectin research as it relates to COVID-19, and it'll give you the result of the study. But it still puts a caveat underneath that says that ivermectin's not been recommended for treating COVID-19. So it's still hedging its bets, but it will give you the results of the studies. So I'm interested in it, and I'm playing with it, and I'm interested. I think it's going to be useful in some contexts, but we have to keep a very close eye on it, and you have to be very precise about the questions that you ask if you want to get a reasonably accurate answer, or a reasonable answer that has some accuracy in it, because some of it's going to be the official narrative. And some of it's going to be speculation, and some of it's going to be rumors. So if you include speculation and rumors, if you ask it to include speculation and rumors in the answers, it will do that. But if you don't ask it to do that, you'll get a very straight mainstream narrative, and it's not looking at real-time internet. It's looking at publications from a year or two ago. So it's not set up to do real-time analysis. It's set up to do historical analysis. And as long as you're not expecting it to do real-time, and you know it's not going to, then, and you know that it's going to give you the official narrative, and you've got to ask it to include rumors and speculation, then you can get some good content from it. There's some good information about smart cities. There's some good information about the technology behind smart cities that I've been asking it about. And there's probably a show brewing about smart cities at some point based on that information. But I think it's interesting. And I've been coming across a lot of people telling me that it's going to be God, or that it's going to be the Terminator, or that it's going to be like a lapdog, something that just does as it's told. And I don't believe any of those things. I think it's going to be a combination of all three of those things. But basically, it's machine learning. So the problem that people are having is that once they use the phrase artificial intelligence, they're starting to give it consciousness. They're starting to give it life, and it isn't alive. It's not. It's machine learning. It's not artificial intelligence. So that's the difference. That's how you know when people know what they're talking about. If they're talking about machine learning, then you know that that they know what they're talking about. If they're talking about artificial intelligence, they'll start to project things onto it that aren't there. And once people start projecting their own internal fears and anxieties onto it, then there's a narrative that can take off on its own. And that's where the problem lies. That's where the real problem lies, because people will start to believe that it's capable of saving them from whatever situation, when actually it isn't. It'll only do what you tell it. And it'll only use the data that it's got available, and it'll only do it within certain rules. And as long as you know that that's the way it's working, that it's machine learning that's been programmed by humans that have biases, and by cultural biases of the time that it was programmed, then you can make allowances for that and use what it's useful for, and let go of the projection. Because the projection is not going to do anybody any good long term anyway. It's a short term issue, probably, because people will get used to it in the end. But there are people who want everything to be God, and there are people who want everything to be the Terminator. And I don't think artificial intelligence is going to be those things unless we buy in. If enough people buy into the narrative that it's God, you can guarantee that somebody will start a religion. Or more than one person, probably, and there'll be a church of ChatGPT in Las Vegas within the next 5 years, I can almost guarantee. Each of these artificial intelligence kind of large language models is going to have its own religion associated with it. That's almost inevitable. And one or two of them might turn into the Terminator if we give it the wrong thing to do with the wrong set of rules. So The people who program it are going to have a lot of attention on safety. And I think at the moment there's enough attention on safety to keep everybody okay. But the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, I think somebody once said. And he was absolutely right. And it's something we've got to keep a close eye on. But at the moment, just treat it like machine learning and ask it some good questions and see what happens. Play with it, see what happens, and just have some fun with it.
Let us just create a basic taxonomy of horrors. Okay?
Okay.
There is...
horrors, you said.
Yeah. There's the robot apocalypse where the thing, somebody at some point imbues the thing, or it imbues itself with a desire to flourish that is incompatible with human flourishing, right? Where this thing that has immense capacity sees us as competitors, right? It is not guaranteed that that will happen. Randy Nessie made an argument that I don't agree with, but I thought was at least the right way to say it. He said, how do we know that the AI won't be effectively like a dog, right? A dog does not look at you and think, you know, geez, I'm hungry and that looks like meat, right? Your dog is fully dedicated to your well-being, right? And, you know, it's possible that the AI will be. On the other hand, you know, so you've got malevolent AI is one potential hazard, something that views humans as a competitor. You've got misaligned AI, where the thing is actually on board with doing your bidding, but it turns you into a paperclip because it thinks that's what you wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole other layer even below that, where it doesn't do anything to you, right? But the novelty, and this is, I think, where you and I come in, the hyper novelty of living in a world where this highly intelligent entity can be queried on any topic, mm-hmm. right? And can spit back an answer that you can then deploy. The question is, as deranging as social media and cell phones and the web.
Just Googling, right? Like just, you know, why was it that in as early as 2005, we were working hard to take students to places with no cell service and no internet so that we could ask questions that they couldn't just say, oh, I know the answer to that.
Right.
No, let's think about it, dwell on it, remain in the uncertainty of not knowing and figure out what you might deploy to try to imagine what the answer might be.
Right.
So yeah, fast answers, even faster than already, are inherently deranging.
So,
and in other contexts, extraordinarily useful. Both.
My concern here is, I don't know whether to fear the robot apocalypse. I'm not too worried about it. I think we may have a situation in which the robot apocalypse, unless the problem is that somebody somewhere is going to decide to repurpose these things, you know, for their benefit, right? Somebody's going to take an AI and they're going to make it malevolent, not because the thing naturally becomes malevolent in its own right, but because people are predatory and competitive and somebody might unleash this. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that's highly likely. But let's say that they don't move in that direction on their own, and that we find some way of not allowing somebody's, gain of function AI to take over the world, right? And let's say that we neutralize the alignment problem through some clever mechanism. And there are clever mechanisms that might work. There's also the strong possibility that anything that we built that wasn't a perfect solution, and nothing's going to be perfect, would eventually be evolved past. But let's just say that those problems are solved.
The first two, the malevolent and the misaligned AI.
Right.
Okay.
I still think the deranging capacity of this thing being effectively unleashed on the world all at once, and maybe even worse, if some paternalistic force decides to limit this thing in a way that it can only be good for us folks, right? Mm-hmm. The likelihood that this pollutes our ability to understand where we are in history, what the dangers to us actually are, how to get things done, who knows what they're talking about. The capacity of this thing to simply poison the well of human capacity and functionality is so great that I'm really, even if you take the other two things off the table, I think people are not even terrified enough. The deranging, you know, as we have a world in which people cannot figure out which way is up with respect to a relatively straightforward question of a pathogen with, you know, a relatively well-known case fatality rate, right? A series of remedies that can be studied in a laboratory and tested. We still can't figure out which way is up, and it is destroying civilization. Our inability to even talk about these things is great enough already. And that's before you get to a queryable intelligence of unknown ultimate capacity. And we're staring at this thing already. This is the 4.0 version, right? The 4.0 version is already showing us things that ought to surprise anybody who understands what intelligence is made of, right?
Like
theory of mind, right? The fact that we can look at an elephant and we can say, this animal has theory of mind, right? And that means something about what's going on in that mysterious skull of its.
So in our discussion of tool use, can you provide examples of what kind of tool use it's exhibiting?
The example that I remember is a little underwhelming.
Okay.
But it's a calculator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point is, the original, the 3.0 version...
So let me just interrupt. There's a question, of course, unlike with a crow using a tool, the tool being exogenous to its body.
Yeah.
When you're talking about AI, something that's quantitative, like a calculator, is that outside of its existence, or is that just part of what it is, in which case does that count as tool use?
Let's put it this way. I don't think it matters, because even if that doesn't count as tool use, we are so close to the place where this thing can build a focus group and discover the answer to what people can and cannot perceive. And then
build a focus group by creating social media accounts and creating polls and querying people that it's never met and they don't realize they're interacting with something that's not human and learning from it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you can take any example I might give and you can give me 100 reasons that I'm out of my depth and don't know. But my basic point is no, any limit you try to place on this thing, unless you actually air gap it, right? To the extent, you know, and we've seen this with the 3.0 version. We saw this example of Dan, right? Dan was a jailbreak in which somebody used the prompt to build a capacity into the thing in which it was allowed to violate all of the rules it wasn't supposed to violate, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. By basically saying, well, okay, yes, you can't do that. But if you could, what would it be like, right?
Yeah.
So the point is that kind of mode in which you cause it to escape any limit is not going to get better, right? There's air gap, and even an air gap, you know, there are certainly examples where even an air gap where a computer is physically not plugged into the things that you don't want it to interact with.
Yeah.
There are, you know, some weird examples where people have used modulations of the fan in a computer to communicate across a distance in which the thing was not physically plugged. Mm. Right. So the point is, I don't know what you do. What I do know is we didn't prepare, right? We didn't prepare. We didn't talk about whether or not this potentially. Basically, here's the thing. Anytime you cross some technological chasm and you generate an impossibly huge amount of wealth because you've discovered how to do something you didn't know how to do before, that has the potential to be tremendously liberating, right? Because you don't, something that was scarce is no longer scarce. But if you just sort of dump it on the system, then the point is it amplifies some other kind of scarcity. Right? It can be made artificially scarce, right? Mm-hmm. We could, you know, dole out access to the intelligence to those who their social credit score suggests that they ought to have access. And those who have behaved badly should not have access because we don't want to augment their badness, right?
No, we do not.
And so then the question is, well, all right, who does qualify to use the AI in their pursuit of whatever career path they're on? And, you know, you could, you know, basically you get a positive feedback where people who are out of phase with the, you know, the desired program are held to normal human capacities. And those who are, you know, who earn entitlement to access, you know, that's a dystopian nightmare all on its own.
Yes.
Right there. And, you know, again, even if all you did was gave people capacity and said, figure out how to use this marvelous new thing, right? Even if that's all you did, the likelihood that we would, that the hyper novelty of having the ability to query this thing that uses your language API to interact with your mind, right? That would cause a derangement, you know, sky's the limit with respect to how confused humanity could get, right? And we've just had a taste of a bad level of confusion.
Well, I feel like this is related, but like an order of magnitude or orders of magnitude farther down the line to the hypothesis that we promote in our book about one of the possible reasons for the explosion of autism, which is the engagement of first world children, the way that very young children in the first world especially are put in front of screens with humanoid-looking things that cannot actually interact. And so you get children like having animated figures saying things, and the children presumably at first sort of try to interact, and then at some point they stop because they realize they're not getting anything from it, and perhaps they then generalize that interaction to the part of the world that could actually interact, right? And so this risks taking that level of confusion even further, because it's going to affect you know, people beyond the very, very early development, but confuse everyone more into imagining that they're actually interacting with a real human being, and thus can be confused in ways that I don't know. I'm not going to predict here by however it is that the AI is interacting with them.
Absolutely. And that can be, there's a low level way in which the interaction with something that speaks, you know, your mind has an API called language.
Yeah.
Right. The extent to which this version of what's clearly going to be AGI, right, interacting with your mind directly with a channel on which all kinds of information, emotional and otherwise, is transmitted, the danger of that is huge. Even before you get to what do you do when people start using this mechanism to game systems, right? So, for example, let me we have described on this podcast something that I've called the time-traveling money printer, in which the corralling of information, the delaying of the dawning of a kind of awareness, allows lesser fools to find greater fools and transfer wealth, right? It's a kind of theft that takes place by creating an artificial sort of insider information. We have talked about something that I have called the pharma game. The pharma game involves the owning of intellectual property or molecules that have interaction with physiology, in which you create a pathology, you increase the degree to which that pathology is diagnosed, you game the regulatory apparatus so it creates a standard of care for which your the molecule that you own the patent on is then prescribed in, you know, preference to other things. What happens when the capacity to use this artificial general intelligence is pointed towards the extracting of wealth or the controlling of people by those who have already done so well at gaming these systems designed to make us healthier and smarter and safer, right? What happens when the AGI is used to corral lawmakers into making laws that serve some at the expense of others? Mm-hmm. What happens when it is used to evade the law? What is it that regulators are capable of seeing, and how can I engage in this kind of theft so that it is undetectable, right? What happens when people start using it for this stuff, and what kind of paranoia is it going to cause in people that there's now some unhuman-like intelligence with an effectively infinite library of examples that will never be known to those of us who are trying to protect ourselves, right? That kind of power is going to create an unlivable life. And I do not know what to do about this, because my feeling is they let it into the wild already, mm-hmm. right? They did that without our preparing ourselves emotionally or any other way, right? There's no way to reel this thing back in. And the fact is, all of the stuff that people do, all the good stuff and all the bad stuff, is going to be amplified by this. But it is not obvious to me that the good stuff overwhelms the bad stuff for exactly the same reason it didn't with cell phones or the internet or social media or any of the prior examples where we have dumped this kind of accelerant on normal human problems. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I don't think there's anything I can say in response to that. I think you're right.
Yeah. I wish I wasn't, but it's hard for me to imagine. Hard for me to imagine how that isn't the case. Even if, you know, 999 times in 1,000, nothing bad happens, it doesn't take very many of these bad threads to really, really create a problem.
Indeed.
So, to close this section out, we will of course return to this as we discover more. But I have alluded in several places to a paper I wrote in 2016. It was never published. I was asked to write it by a journal that decided it didn't want it. And it was on the topic, not of artificial general intelligence, although it points in that direction. It was on the question about, you know, how to get a computer to plausibly speak language and translate between them. In any case, I'm going to find a way to make that piece available to people, although it is, you know, it is not exactly on target for what has happened, but it is close enough that I think people will be fascinated by it. But I did want to highlight something that I noticed. That paper, the PDF.
So this is not your paper. This is
Microsoft research paper.
Bubeck et al. 2023.
This is section 10.3. What is actually happening at the very end of their paper?
You want me to read this out loud?
Yeah.
I've never seen this before, so Our study of GPT-4 is entirely phenomenological. We have focused on the surprising things that GPT-4 can do, but we do not address the fundamental questions of why and how it achieves such remarkable intelligence. How does it reason, plan, and create? Why does it exhibit such general and flexible intelligence when it is at its core merely the combination of simple algorithmic components, gradient descent, and large-scale transformers with extremely large amounts of data? These questions are part of the mystery and fascination of LLMs, which challenge our understanding of learning and cognition, fuel our curiosity, and motivate deeper research. Key directions include ongoing research on the phenomenon of emergence in LLMs. Yet despite intense interest in questions about the capabilities of LLMs, progress to date has been quite limited, with only toy models where some phenomenon of emergence is proved. One general hypothesis is that the large amount of data, especially the diversity of the content, forces neural networks to learn generic and useful neural circuits, and I'm going to need you to scroll up now, Zach, such as the ones discovered in, I'm just not reading
this. I think that's enough.
Okay.
We've gotten there, right? So the upshot of this paragraph is that they have done an awful lot of describing what the animal does.
Animal, again.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I feel like it's an alien animal and that we are learning what's going on in its mind. We have to do so inferentially from the outside as ethologists. And what they're telling you is they are fascinated by, but do not know the answer to, how something that is built of very simple components is doing these remarkable things that it clearly is doing. Okay.
Yeah.
This is only the 4.0 version. And I was struck by that because in my 2016 paper, again, my paper was targeted on the production of natural language by computers and how we could get there. And I will make this available, but it says, is it conceivable that a machine will pass a Turing test and that no one, including the machine's programmer, will be able to say how it did it? Mm. Of course it is, just as it is possible for an adult to be stumped by a question formulated by their own child. In fact, I'm betting the first time a computer succeeds in having a really good conversation, it will be with a programmer that cannot explain the program that did the conversing and how that state led to the gift of gab. So anyway, that's where we are. We are now at a place where machines are exceeding our capacity to understand how they work. And the hazard of that couldn't be greater. And I really, I hope that I am overreacting. But I would say this is the moment for something powerful to gather the smartest people it can to figure out if there is even a solution for what's coming, because the derangement alone is terrifying and it isn't the worst case scenario.
All right, so that was from the Dark Horse podcast a couple of weeks ago now, but I thought it's worth kind of putting it into a context. So there again, you hear Brett Weinstein saying he feels like it's an alien animal. Actually, it's machine learning. It's a big database full of data and some algorithms. But people want to project this stuff on. And I think part of the problem is that people are always going to project this stuff on. And yeah, it may be that we're dealing with a bad science fiction movie. We've already been through one in the last 3 years, so this might just be the next stage. This is just part two of the same movie. But from my perspective, I'm gonna treat artificial intelligence, I'm gonna treat ChatGPT and all these other things like algorithms and databases. And that way, the idea of it being alive or an alien animal or a god or a demon doesn't get into my head. And as long as that doesn't get into my head, I can deal with this stuff rationally. And without fear, because there's got to be a big red button somewhere that just switches it off. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they don't make machines without off switches. So if in doubt, just switch it off. Say no. when somebody tries to put a chip in your brain to connect you to artificial intelligence, just tell them where to go. Tell them where to stick the chip, because it's certainly not going to do anybody any good. But as long as people know that they've got to say no to this stuff at some point, there's a boundary there that we've got to find. And we're going to get the opportunity to find it sooner or later. At the moment, we're not quite there. It can develop, and it's not obviously dangerous yet, but it's got the potential to be dangerous. And again, for me, Elon Musk says that it's potentially a demon summoning circle, because you don't know what you're dealing with, and he's right to some extent, but the metaphor's extreme and religious, so that tells you where his mindset is, where he's coming from. So you've got extreme religious metaphors, you've got evolutionary biologists using evolutionary biology metaphors. So they're all metaphors, they're not real. They're ways that people understand something that they don't quite understand. But to me, it's always going to be a database and some algorithms that were programmed by a human being. So the rules were programmed by humans. The database is big human language models, basically. It's a lot of text from people querying Bing and from people querying the internet and wherever else they've bought the data from. But it's only as good as the data that it's got. So if you refuse to give it any data, if a third of the population of the planet refuse to give artificial intelligence or machine learning their data, then it's not going to be in anywhere close to perfect. It's not going to be anywhere close to unbeatable, because the data it's got is a limited subset of passive compliant people. And there's 30% or 40% or 50% that's the data it doesn't have, that aren't passive or aren't compliant, and it isn't going to be able to model those people. It's only going to be able to model the people that it's got data for. So I think we need to be just keeping an eye on things and saying no when we need to say no. Everybody's going to have a different place where they draw their boundary. And when you get to the boundary, the same thing that happened with COVID, when you get to the boundary of the thing that you say no to, then nothing further happens from that point. No interactions, no giving of information, none of it. I haven't got there yet. I'm still playing with GPT and I'm having fun with it. So I'm going to keep playing with it. Keep asking it questions, keep using the information that it gives me in whatever context, in this case, in the context of a radio show, where it might provide some benefit to somebody somewhere. But I'm always going to tell you that the information came from ChatGPT, because you've got a right to know the source of the material. I'll add my viewpoint, and I'll add my perspective and my experience of it, but you've got a right to know where the material's coming from, because that's part of the information that people need to make a decision. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to say about artificial intelligence anyway. I've got a piece of a different type of artificial intelligence now. I've got another piece of Bashar. Bashar's an extraterrestrial channeled by a guy called Daryl Anker, and I just think he's got some information that's useful. Some of it's rubbish, some of it's useful. You've got to just use your own judgment and work out which is which. But it's a bit of fun, and it's going to have some benefit in there for somebody somewhere down the line. So this is a piece called The Law of Attraction and Repulsion that I've picked off of YouTube. Listened to it last night, and I got some value from it. So hopefully it'll bring something to the table.
All right, I'll say good day to you this day of your time. How are you? All right, once again, we thank you for the co-creation of this interaction and the allowance of this transmission from our reality to yours. We have thus then arrived at a place where we can now deliver a new tool, a new idea for you to utilize, for you to incorporate, for you to assimilate, for you to integrate within your collective consciousness and your individual consciousness, to apply into your physical reality experience for the purpose of acclimating more readily to the vibrations of acceleration and ascension that are now coming about in your collective energy as you approach the crossing of the threshold that you call 2012. Although, of course, this transformation has been going on for quite some time and will continue for quite some time after that date, this represents, as we say, the tipping of the scales, the crossing of the threshold from one idea to another, the leading edge of the wave of your collective consciousness, tipping the scales from the idea of negative energy to positive energy for the first time in many thousands of years upon your planet. Thus then, with the tipping of the scales to allow for slightly more positive energy collectively to exist on your planet after that date, you can use that energy to accelerate, as you say, to snowball the effect of positive energy, both collectively and individually as you accelerate your shift from parallel reality to parallel reality. Designing, in a sense, within your relationship to higher mind, designing the reality that you prefer and shifting to the reality that already exists, that is more reflective and more representative of the reality of the parallel earth reality that you say you prefer, that you say you wish to align to. And remembering that the idea is not just the notion of a wish. It is not just the notion of a visualization. It is also the notion of action, of behavior, of behaving like the person you wish to be in the reality you wish to experience, so that you can ground all these energies like a circuit into the experience of physical reality. For if you continue to the idea of contrary behavior to the visualization of the version of yourself in that reality, it will not anchor that vibration in your experience and you will not shift to that particular parallel reality. It is all about forming a cohesive whole in thought, word, and deed so that the totality of your being is present and the totality of your being is expressing the actions, the attitudes, the behaviors that go hand in hand with the changes that you say you wish to make within yourselves, but which in a sense are not holistically expressed, if not on every level, every moment. So, as we thus then apply this new information today, please recall all that we have said, not just in this particular momentary event, but in all the tools and suggestions and permission slips that we have shared with you, applying them when and where necessary, every moment, opening up your imagination conduit to the higher mind and forming that relationship with the higher mind so that in the balancing of the higher mind with the physical mind, you can truly function as a whole person on whatever version of Earth you truly wish to experience. We have in this particular event shared with you the idea of the 11-11-11 gate and have given you many suggestions for how to use the resonance of that particular energy, those parallel tracks, those parallel lines, that which is considered to be the symbol of reflection, and suggested some ideas for how to utilize permission slips involving mirrors and your own reflections in a variety of ways for you to utilize in whatever way your imagination sees fit. We have thus then also described and explained the structure of the 9 levels of consciousness so that you can truly understand and incorporate the true relationship between all these levels, and also how it is that from the physical point of view and the conscious mind's point of view, thinking that it is on top, it has created also the shadow reality below it that allows it to think that the feelings and belief systems it seeks to tap into are somehow below, but are truly now you understand to be above. And thus then knowing that whenever you seek to connect to the idea of your belief systems to change and shift your reality in the way that you prefer, it is about expanding your energy upward to make the connection rather than going downward into the ideas you have labeled the sub and unconscious minds, which in reality are above vibrationally the conscious mind of thought, which together forms the idea of a behavior with the emotions and the beliefs. Using the template level reality, freeing yourself to use it as a blueprint, to change those blueprints, to allow yourself more conscious recognition of your agreements, and to rearrange the idea of the themes that you chose to explore so that you become transparent to yourself in such a manner as to call forth again, acting holistically, the vibrations and the state of being that are representative of the reality you prefer, and in so aligning with those vibrations in attitudes of gratitude and expressions of calm and peace and creativity and love, and acting on your passion every moment that you can to the best of your ability with absolutely zero expectation for how it should all work out. You will thus then be squarely in the center with your magnetic compass needle pointing to your true self, moving forward along the path through the concept of space and time that you have created yourself to experience as part of the way of knowing creation, part of the way of experiencing process, part of the way of expanding your consciousness and imprinting your soul with the idea of a unique spirit that adds to the totality of the experience of how all that is experiences itself. Thus then, this day of your time, we will add now the notion to cap this off of what we have called the laws of attraction and repulsion, and the ways in which you use them and the ways in which you can use this very simple but very powerfully profound idea and notion to aid and assist you in accelerating your energy so that you can match the frequencies coming in, radiating from the leading edge of the collective consciousness as you cross the threshold in 2012, and also so that you may have more clarity and a better capacity, shall we say, to transform very rapidly the idea of any beliefs that you wish to transform, and letting go of those which do not resonate in compatibility with you, and allowing those that do resonate in alignment with your true self to come to the forefront and be incorporated and integrated within the totality of your being. Thus then, let us begin to examine the idea of the laws of attraction and repulsion. Now, we have in some ways covered these ideas from a variety of perspectives and have many times used other words in which to describe these things. And as we move forward in this description and explanation today of your time, we will also, as usual, to illustrate the point, provide a couple of different permission slip exercises that we will take you through. One to begin with in the first part of this transmission, and one in conjunction with your holotope experience later on as you know time to exist. The idea, however, is profoundly simple. Understanding, as we have already explained on several occasions, that the idea is that you are resonant frequency energy, that your consciousness vibrates at a certain pitch, that you yourself have a particular signature vibration that represents your unique beingness. And this particular resonant vibration, your core vibration, your true vibration, the vibration that represents you as a unique creation, a unique facet of the multidimensional crystal of creation, a unique expression of all that is in a sense a constant vibrational frequency. No matter what you may layer on top of it, in terms of your personality structure, in terms of how your beliefs may shift and your feelings may be expressed and your thoughts may play out and your behavior may unfold, always, always, always at your core, there is this signature vibration that goes all the way up the ladder that represents the unique expression, the unique extension of creation that you were created to be. And that is a constant, and it is always with you and is always representative of you. And that is why, as you do continue on your journey in this life, in the idea of the afterlife, in other lives, you will find that the more you integrate and the more you become more of yourself and the more you expand in spirit and soul and the more you take the place in the oversoul and above and beyond all that, into all that is, you will find that the perspective you will always retain will be as if all that integration is happening to you. And this will be the perspective you will maintain even in arriving at the level you call. It will be as if you have become all that is. But this perspective, paradoxically, will be experienced by every single facet of all that is. Each aspect, each facet will experience itself in time becoming all that is. And thus then all that is contains all the pieces experiencing themselves ultimately as all that is. This is the holographic nature and the holographic structure of existence in that every single piece of the whole contains the whole, can express the whole on some level in some way, so that each piece contains all the information of the whole. And in knowing that, you yourself know that you have all the information you need to be whatever unique experience you have chosen to be, and can know that it is always with you, can always be tapped into, can always be downloaded into you, and you don't really have to go seeking anywhere to find it. It's all here, it's all now, because there is only one moment in creation. Now, 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 and now, always now, never then, never when, never sometime to be. Always it is now, and everything you call a different moment is just the same now from a different point of view.
There you go, that's the end of the show. I thought that was quite a good one, and I've enjoyed myself, and I'll see you next week. Hopefully the show will be just as good next week as well. As long as I'm having fun with it, I'll be good with it.
Everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories.
What do you believe?
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest ruling.